Hello, Richard. Hello, Vincent. Hope you're both good. Enjoying seeing your time in Provence on Instagram. Here are my questions. First of all, number one, where was I born and where did I grow up? I was born in Aberfeldy in Perthshire, in the Aberfeldy Cottage Hospital. But I grew up in Angus, which is the neighbouring county in Scotland, near the little town of Carnoustie, where they do golf tournaments. And I grew up in a country estate. My father was the head forester of a country estate, so I grew up in the middle of a forest, literally. Question two, at what age did I know or recognize I was an entertainer or performer? I used to always play on my own and make up stories. I would wander around the forest on my own, and so I kind of used, you know, acting or play acting or using my imagination in a sort of performative way from quite an early age. But it wasn't until I was in high school, I was probably about 13 or 14, when I sort of really thought about it, because I did a play at school and I recognised that I was actually kind of good at something. And that was the first thing I was ever any good at. Next question, where did I train as an actor, and did any of your teachers or people in the industry have a big influence on you? I trained at the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama. It's now called the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. And yeah, a lot of my teachers had an influence on me. One had an influence on me in a very negative way. He told me in my second year that I would never make it as a professional actor. And I've since heard that at the same time he told other people that he thought I was going to be a big star. I think that's an example of bad teaching. Lots of people have had influence on me in the industry, but I'm not a person who looks at people as icons or mentors in that way. I think you've got to forge your own way. I take the good things from people and I see the bad things and try not to repeat them. What was it like? What was my reaction to performing Cabaret on Broadway? Cabaret on Broadway for me was completely overwhelming. I didn't know what the fuck was going on. I had never worked in New York before or been in a play in America before, and suddenly I was in the lead in a big, huge Broadway musical. It was overwhelming. I didn't know all the sort of mores and tropes of Broadway, but it was an incredible experience. I really loved doing the role. I think I was at a very good time in my life, comfortable with myself, my body, my sexuality, to really, that really helped the role and the production and the kind of way that the whole show was placed in the zeitgeist at the time. I'd done it 4 years before in London and it went very well. That's why we did it on Broadway. But I don't think I was as comfortable as I was when I did it in 1998. But in terms of the reaction and the whole sort of sensation of it, it was completely overwhelming. And I kind of look back on it now. I'm so glad I did it again, which is onto your next question. In 2014 and 15, I did it again. It was directed by both Sam and Rob Marshall. I think that's important to note that both of them directed it. I'm so glad I did it again because I sort of was able to do the play and really enjoy it without being so confused by all the hoopla around it. And actually, I think what was good about doing it 16 years later is that all the sensational stuff, like the sexuality and everything, was less sensational. And so it didn't cloud the production in the way that I think it did in 1998. And so actually the darkness of the production and of the play were able to come through. That was the biggest difference. And also I kind of was more in, I'd been around the block a few times. I knew how Broadway worked. I knew I was sort of comfortable in my life. And I felt I'm so glad I went back and did it again, because I kind of was able to enjoy it more and savour it more. And also I think the play was better. I didn't actually make my directorial debut in 2001. I directed a couple of short films before that. All that information, if you want, is on my website. But I did a short film called Butter with a bunch of famous English actors. Then I did a short film where it's just me called Burn Your Phone. So, but then, yeah, The Anniversary Party was my first feature film. That collaboration started because Jennifer came in to replace Natasha Richardson after she left in Cabaret in 1998, and that's where we met. But then I went straight off to do the film of Titus in Rome, and so I didn't really get much of a chance to work with Jennifer. We did, obviously, for a couple of months, but we always felt we hadn't really collaborated. And also those two roles, the MC and Sally Bowles, don't actually interact much on stage. So we stayed friends and we just decided that we would like to work on something. And it was around the time of those Dogma films were happening. We sort of tried to do something, you know, kind of without all the trappings of Hollywood. And it wasn't a Dogma film by any manner of means, but that was sort of inspired. And it was the first studio film to use digital video. So, and the story germinated just from like our friends, and we wrote for these people. And you know, Jennifer is born and bred in LA and loves it. I am not from LA and I don't really like it. And I think that was a very big sort of, I mean, I like it. I just don't want to live there. Whereas she will never leave. And so I think that was the sort of germination of the idea. And yes, the play was, the film was very autobiographical, both in that instance I've just given you, but also just in terms of, you know, I'm this bisexual European, and Jennifer plays as an actress who's kind of, you know, getting a little older. There was lots of, and we kind of took elements of all the characters, all the actors who played the characters, and brought autobiographical elements into it, and even wrote for the sort of timbre of their voices. Eli Gold was just offered to me for one episode in early 2010. And I didn't want to do it. I just thought, why are they asking me to do this? I didn't understand it. You know, you have to, on television, when you get asked to do an episode of something, it happens really quickly. And I was just like, well, what's going on? Who are these people? I don't understand what. But my, you know, managers and agents sort of said, we really think you should do this. It's a quality thing. And, you know, who knows what could come of it. So I don't know why they asked me. I really don't. I heard a rumor that Nathan Lane had turned it down, and then they came to me. You know, obvious choice. I don't know if that's true. I mean, it was an interesting thing for me because I realized that you know, first of all, I thought, why are they asking me to do this? I'm not this person, but you know, he's a middle-aged man in a suit. And then I realized, well, I'm a middle-aged man. I just put a suit on and I'll be able to do it. So it was a big kind of growing and learning curve for me in terms of as an actor and as a man, realizing that, you know, I am now a grown up. And it was my first recurring role on an American network show. Yep. Affected my career in a lot of ways, like that way I just said about me learning a lot. But also, you know, I was just on television for 7 years and sort of nominated for lots of awards and blah, blah. And that kind of, you know, when you're on television for a long time, you're really in people's minds, and you really stay in people's kind of mental periphery. So that's, I think, when with films and plays and things, they're one-off things, are much more sort of fleeting. But when you're in people's homes every week for many, many years, you kind of are sort of, you stick with them. And that changes how one's life exists in the universe. So yes, it did bring me a new level of fame and recognition. In terms of After Louis, the reason I took the role was I had never seen or read anything that just discussed the treaties that there's this schism between generations of gay men. I'd never seen anything about this. I'd thought it and I'd experienced it, but I'd never actually seen it in a book or a film or anything. And so when I read this script, I thought, wow, this is so refreshing and fascinating, because this is something that we all, especially gay people, understand, but we've never actually discussed it. So that's why I did it. I thought it was so well written. I liked the idea of me playing someone who was not charming and fun and, you know, or mischievous and devilish or whatever. He was kind of a dick, my character. He was sort of, you know, not very nice and, you know, had obviously got a lot of depression and PTSD and survivor guilt and things like that. But he was also just not very, he wasn't the usual kind of person I play, or even when I play, you know, crazy people like Eli or other characters, they're usually sort of charming or, you know, you want to charm people. People are drawn to you because you're sort of mischievous, or you're, but with this character, with Sam, I sort of purposely tried to be not likable, I thought that was important. I didn't want to charm people. I wanted people to, so that when they finally feel for him, it's earned. So that was really exciting for me to play a character like that. And in terms of personally, I wasn't in New York, and during the AIDS crisis, I was aware of it and I was very shaken by it, but I didn't, I was in Scotland and I was young enough that I didn't lose lots of my friends, but I feel it's, but for a series of coincidences like where I grew up, that might not have been the case. So it's something that really resonates with me as a queer man, and something that's very much a part of my sort of collective memory and history of my community. So that's why I just thought it was a really great script, and I'm really glad I did it. How did I meet my husband, Grant? I met him in New York through a friend in 2000, and in 2000, and we were sort of acquaintances, friends for a couple of years, and then we got together in 2004. And when did I know he was the one? In 2004, I had a sort of housewarming / 4th of July party at my new place in the Catskills, and he came, and it just happened. I just looked at him, he looked at me, and that was it. When and why did I become a US citizen? I became a US citizen in 2008 so I could take part in the political process and vote. I wanted to vote for Barack Obama. I was very inspired by his message. I left it too late because the immigration process takes a little longer now since 9/11. So I actually became a citizen 3 days after Obama won. But still, I'm very glad I did. I that's why I did it. I want to think it's important to put your money where your mouth is and to take part in the political process and to use your vote. So that's why I did that. How did I get Club Cumming, and how often do I perform? How often do I go there? So Club Cumming, I go there when I'm in New York. It varies. I'm sometimes away for months. But, it's sort of like an extension of my life in New York. I just pop round and, I love all the people who work there and perform there. And I wanted Club Cumming to feel like it was a party in my apartment. And it obviously isn't. It's a bar and everything. But, I wanted to have that vibe and that sort of energy and my spirit in it. So I go often when I'm in New York. I haven't obviously been for a long time because of COVID and everything. And before that, I was in London doing a play. So I kind of miss it. But we're actually starting a Club Cumming online variety show to sort of try and keep the spirit of Club Cumming alive and to give the performers there something to do. And also, to let people know about it and let people connect with their people they love who perform there. So that's coming out soon on this platform called Looped. We've had fun guests. People drop by all the time. Like Debbie Harry dropped by to read a bit from her autobiography. Paul McCartney came by one time and he played the harmonica whilst Emma Stone and I sang Part of Your World from The Little Mermaid. It's stuff like that happens all the time. Just people. I love that. I love that. Our sort of byline, if you like, for the bar is anything could happen. And I really do feel that's what we want to keep. And it's not a celebrity haunt. I don't want it to be like but I like it when people feel comfortable enough to come and they come for the spirit and the kindness and the fun that they hear about. So it's a magical place. Oh God, I hate that question about the living or dead. I'm not going to answer that one. In Instinct, it was very, really the reason I did the show, I just finished The Good Wife the year before. Well, it wasn't really my intention to go back into network television. But, being asked to play the first ever leading character on a network drama who's gay was a big deal for me. And also I thought it would be fun to do a cop show, which is sort of essentially what it was. But yeah, I was really glad that his sexuality was like the fourth or fifth thing about him that you would mention. There were many other things that were more remarkable. And you know, that was that I realized how often on network television, in America at least, someone's sexuality, if they're not straight, is kind of always the main part of their storyline and their reason for being there. And it's usually in a negative light. There's something wrong with them. They're sick, or they've got a problem, or they're a serial killer. And so it was just really nice to play a character who was queer and married, and really his sexuality was hardly mentioned. And it just was like, oh, he's going home, and hello, darling, and blah, blah, blah. So I did feel a sense of responsibility, because I wanted it to be non-sensational and obviously non-judgmental. And I think it did really well. And, you know, within the confines of essentially a cop show, to have a gay married couple in America in Trump's America, I think was a really great achievement. Why did I become a vegan? I became a vegan about 10 years ago because I had been a vegetarian for a long time before that, but I was just so fed up of every meal I got being drenched in cheese. That's what kind of happens to you when you're a vegetarian. And I just decided, and it was affecting my skin and my voice, so much dairy. And I was starting to sing to do concerts. And so that was what I was a bit more paranoid about. The mucus levels in my throat. So I was thinking about becoming a vegan, and also for, you know, a variety of reasons, sort of in terms of the environment, in terms of animal cruelty, in terms of what it does to my body. I don't like the idea of rotting flesh in my body. I just don't. And I never have really. So now I don't do any of it. And the real thing, the sort of straw that broke the camel's back, if you will, and made me turn full vegan was I saw it was at New Year, and I saw that Mike Tyson was the new face of Veganism magazine. And I thought, if Mike Tyson can do it, I can do it. So the question about which issues are important to the community now, I just think we've got to be vigilant. I think, you know, in most of the interviews I do about LGBTQ plus issues, people always say, isn't it great? We've come so far. And I say, yes, but we haven't come far enough. We still don't have equality. You know, there's places in America where you can still be fired for your sexuality or your gender orientation. You know, black trans women are being killed at an alarming rate. The life expectancy for a black trans woman in America is 35. And that's not because they're dying of diseases. That's because people are killing them who hate them. So I feel there is a long way to go. And I think the most important thing is not to be complacent and to be vigilant about the little things that are happening, about, oh, a ban here, a healthcare ban here. You know, that this administration does not like people who are, in their view, different. And I am different, and I am worried about what could happen if Trump gets in again. So, yes, we can get married, and yes, we can do things that we might never have dreamed of even a relatively short time ago, but we still don't have equality, and we still don't have the respect that most straight people don't even have to think about. Upcoming projects, not much. Quite a lot. I've got a new book, another memoir I'm working on. I've been doing quite a lot of animated voice work, you know, in the lockdown. I've got a show coming out, I think that's coming out in February on HBO Max, called The Prince, an animated show. And I've got my podcast that I do with Chris Sweeney. It's called Homo Sapiens. It's an LGBTQ-focused podcast. And we do, this season, we're being interviewing people we think of as icons. And next season, we're going to be talking to people we think are trailblazers. And so that's really interesting. I really love that. I've been enjoying becoming a podcaster. So there we are. All right, Richard. Take care. Oh, and I don't have a publicist at the moment, but tell Matt how many photos you need, and we have some that we can let you use some high-res ones, but just say how many, and we'll get some over to you. Thank you very much.